you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Good afternoon, it's Hair Talk. I'm Larry Mantle, here later than typically because of our preemption by President Biden's news conference from the White House. And we take you now to Echo Park Lake, where reporter Libby Denkman has spent much of her morning covering what's happening there with the city of Los Angeles' efforts to fence the full perimeter of Echo Park Lake, close the park to the public, and to spend several months doing rehabilitation work at the park. That means, of course, that you've got significant numbers of residents of encampments in the park who are being told they've got to go. Libby, good afternoon. What's the latest for us on what's happening at the park?
Hi, Larry. So last night, we had a large LAPD action here. I was not reporting, but Frank Stoltz, my colleague at KPCC, was here. And basically, police started closing off the streets around Echo Park Lake. So that's Echo Park Avenue and Glendale Boulevard Park. It's kind of sandwiched between Glendale and Echo Park Avenue. And they were assisting, according to Councilmember Mitch O'Farrell, who represents the area, park employees who were putting up fences. They're the metal and green fences that you see kind of temporarily fencing off, say, like concert venues or repair construction crews. And those are up currently around the entire lake. Now, there's also a police line closing off the entire park. So even residents are getting a hard time, walking by the police line or to walk their dogs or get back to their apartments. And no members of the media, no members of the public who are supporters here who wanted to show up to show solidarity for the people who live in the tents are being allowed past that line.
And do you know at this point whether all of the residents of the encampments in the park have been removed?
So I can see tents right now, Larry. I'm at the corner of Glendale and Park, and tents are still up. I just got off the phone with Ayman Ahmed, who's become somewhat of a spokesperson for the tent residents. He's lived in the park for more than a year. He was emotional with me on the phone. He didn't get much sleep after that really massive police response yesterday and protesters who clashed with police trying to stop the fences from going up. He said that there are still about 10 people living in the park with their tents. Some of the tents that are still up have been abandoned at this point because Ayman said of the 50 or so people who were living there yesterday, many of them scattered and were scared by the police action. And so in his words, they fled. Now, we understand from LAPD, and I spoke with a Captain Stabile, who you can probably play an audio cut of here in just a second, that they're giving services to folks who are in the park. LASA is in the park, as is a nonprofit called Urban Alchemy. And they are, folks inside the park are being upgraded to a tier where they are all eligible for Project Room Key hotel rooms. And so that's something that is being offered. There's also a winter shelter nearby that is being offered. But Ayman, who I spoke to just a couple minutes ago, again, emotional, exhausted, he barely got any sleep last night, said that they had a stable community here, that it was, in his words, a beautiful thing. They had showers, they had a garden, they had kinship here, and the stability is now gone, and he feels like the rug has been pulled out from under them. The other thing that, Larry, I think has been really confusing for members of the media and for the public is the lack of transparency about this action. The only reason that protesters knew to show up at the park last night was social media accounts of police staging at Dodger Stadium. There was no announcement ahead of time of the action to close off the park, although it had been rumored and Councilman O'Farrell had said it would come, quote, soon. And so a lot of folks, you know, even neighbors here who live nearby, although they want the park to be a clean and safe place, they say that the way this has been rolled out has been scary and somewhat disturbing to see it kind of a late night action by LAPD to close off the park.
Let's listen to LAPD Captain Rick Stabile. You just mentioned that you talked with him about what police were doing now in that area.
Right now, we have a perimeter set up around Echo Park, and we're currently not allowing vehicle and pedestrian traffic around the park, and that's for the safety of the service providers, the people in the park, and we've set up a protest zone where you're currently standing, where people can come and voice their First Amendment opinions and voice any concerns that they have. So we're trying to find a balance where we're keeping people close so they can see what's happening, monitor what the police are doing, and also get services to the people experiencing homelessness.
Libby, it seems like part of that lack of transparency that you're talking about might have been that the city was trying to avoid even larger groups of protesters coming out last evening if there was a definitive time when it was announced fences were going up. And I wonder if in a sense that worked, because there were, a couple hundred people out last night as opposed to thousands?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was, that the action wasn't announced ahead of time to avoid a massive public pushback. Now, LAPD has characterized the protest last night as largely peaceful. The LA Times has reported that there were some bottles thrown by protesters. There were also there was a reporter whose arm was broken by a baton, who has been sharing images of his x-ray that a police officer, broke his arm last night during some of the clashes between protesters and police. And I think that there's no doubt, the awareness of this action would have certainly brought a huge public pushback. And again, tonight, the deadline for people to get their final items out of the park is 10:30 in the evening. And the expectation is that there will be another large showing of support for these folks who have lived in the park for some of them over a year.
Libby, also just wanted to highlight, you said that now anybody who'd been living in an encampment in the park is eligible for Project Room Key, because when we were talking yesterday, it sounded like they were still using the more narrow eligibility for those hotel rooms.
Yes. So I talked to Lhasa today, and they said that the folks on the ground inside the police perimeter, again, I can't get in. They're not allowing press or any members of the public to get in. One reporter, Emily Albert Reyes with the LA Times, was able to slip in early, early morning, and she's been tweeting from inside the perimeter. They have been upgrading those folks to a tier one status, is what Lhasa has told me, which means they are eligible for Project Room Key. Now, one hiccup there is that there is Project Room Key does not allow pets, for example. You have to have that animal registered as an emotional support animal. And one couple that I spoke to, Henry and Valerie, said that they have a dog and that they don't want to go to a Project Room Key site where they can't have their animal. And they're concerned about onerous restrictions that would, impede the life that they want to live. They're hoping that they can find another safe place to stay in another park, perhaps. However, the Ayman Ahmed, who I spoke to a few minutes ago, told me, the beauty of what was happening at Echo Park was there was a sense of security and that people were watching out for each other, and that's going to be really hard to find. Now, I want to be clear that Mitch O'Farrell, the council member, and you hear some heckling between protesters and police in the background there. Mitch O'Farrell said that, it was not a safe place, the camp, that there had been some drug use and potentially some people who were charging homeless people a, quote, rent to stay in the park. And that was something that he shared in his statement, that was a reason they had to clear the area. Now, members of the community here who live here dispute that account.
Well, and it was always unclear to me whether anybody who wanted to go down and set up a tent, whether they were accepted there, whether because it seemed like it was kind of self-limiting, which it's a beautiful place. If you're going to be living in an encampment, the park is gorgeous, spectacular views. So I was wondering how there weren't even more people that had arrived to the spot to camp there, unless there was sort of control that was going on among the current residents.
Well, you always have, you know, personal issues. I've heard from a few people that sometimes there would be beef between residents and then people would move on. There were some deaths in the park over the past year that Mitch O'Farrell cited as being a safety concern and one reason that they wanted to clear these residents out. You know, from everything I've heard, it was a welcoming place that you were able to just come and join. And Ayman Ahmed tells me that the housing crisis has been so bad that over the course of the year, hundreds of people have lived on and off in the park. Now, more recently, it was only about 50. But every time somebody would move into a shelter or into a housing situation, more people would come and take their place because there was such a need for a stable place to be.
Thank you, Libby. We appreciate your reporting so much from Echo Park Lake, talking about the eviction of those living in the encampment there at the park, the protest last night from those supporting the people staying there living in the park. Fencing is going up around the park, and it is being fully closed to members of the public.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Thank you so much for your support of KPCC and Air Talk. We appreciate it so much. We're going to continue with our State of the Art series. We've already talked about the reopening of museums in Southern California. We've talked about movie theaters opening up their doors once again. And we turn our attention today to live performance venues for music and comedy. But first, speaking of the arts, we've just received word that Jessica Walter, who was an actor on Arrested Development and a star of Archer, has died at the age of 80. A very, very favorite actress for so many people. She's also in feature films. Jessica Walter has died at the age of 80. And we also received word that the prolific French filmmaker Bertrand Tavernier has died at the age of 79, known for such films as The Sunday and the Country, one of my favorites, Round Midnight, which centered on jazz, that from 1986. Bertrand Tavernier has died at the age of 79. We'll have remembrances from our critics on tomorrow's Film Week at 11 o'clock right here on KPCC. With us to talk about the reopening of arts venues for music and for comedy performances is Dave Brook, Senior Director of Live Music at Billboard. Dave, so good to have you with us today.
So happy to be here, Larry. Thanks for having me back.
I appreciate it. So where, what are things looking like right now, tier-wise, for reopening at limited capacity some of these live performance venues, a la what we're seeing in Vegas?
Right. We're seeing, right now in LA County, nothing is open yet, at least for any kind of like a public, gathering or concert. But, as of April 1, venues, both indoor and outdoor, depending on where they are in the configuration, we'll open at a limited capacity, between 10, and 20%. So it's kind of like what you would imagine, a socially distanced concert, you might be sitting or standing in a pod, as they say, right, with one or two friends. There's definitely a chance you could be asked for a vaccine verification at the door, and you will probably be wearing a mask. But you know what? It's been a year without concerts, so I'll take it.
Well, yeah, and so the vaccine verification, of course, is very controversial. Is that something that even online ticket sellers might look for, that verification, before you can purchase a ticket?
Well, that is the big question, right? I mean, that is, you can, like a site like Ticketmaster, can they verify you've been vaccinated with, say, like a clear health pass, right? I mean, they're saying they can, but no one's actually kind of demonstrated yet whether, how that it would work, you know? If that's not possible, I mean, if the technology isn't ready to go by, you know, April 1, and LA County health officials are mandating it, because they would be the ones, just like any local health officials for any concerts across the country would mandate, then you would likely either, you know, show your card, if you have received a vaccine, or a negative test. If you, a rapid result test for COVID-19, because of course not everybody can get the vaccine right away. And so there's a desire not to exclude people who have been vaccinated, but can prove they tested negative in 24 to 48 hours.
And in case you just joined us, there was some significant news from Governor Newsom today that all Californians age 50 and over will be eligible for vaccination starting April 1st. And then April 15th, just 2 weeks later, all Californians 16 years of age and older will be eligible, provided they can get an appointment for a vaccine, but they will be eligible if they can get that appointment. We're talking with Dave Brooks, Senior Director of Live Music for Billboard. Also with us, the owner of the restaurant and jazz club Pips on La Brea. It's in Mid-City, Los Angeles. Derek Pipkin. Thank you, Derek. We appreciate your being with us today.
Hey, Larry, appreciate coming on today and stuff. You know, I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thanks. I'm a fan of your club. You have some tremendous artists who come in and perform there, and in a wonderful venue. It's a great building that you've got. So share with us, have you been closed for much of the pandemic?
You know, actually, we've been closed since day one of the pandemic. You know, our restaurant, you know, is small. It's a smaller venue. And I know we weren't really set up for to go. So we just decided to kind of close. But, you know, we're planning on opening now, like the second week of April. But once again, they keep changing all the rules and stuff. So now, like I said, you can't have live music right now in any venues.
Are you nervous at all about, you know, what some of the restaurants have faced with patrons, some not wanting to, you know, wear face coverings, or other people, you know, not adhering to, you know, staying at their table and table hopping? We all hear these anecdotes. Does that concern you at all about when you open your doors?
Yeah, actually, it's a big concern because, you know, like I said, you really have to monitor that. And you know, it's kind of hard to really monitor it, especially because we have, you know, especially with the live music. So that's going to be a challenge because they're very strict, and, you know, they come in, they see people walking around, you know, they can cite you in a couple of sites and they close you down. So it's definitely going to be, you know, that's just one of many challenges, you know. And then another challenge, I think, is people, you know, because I said we do jazz. And, you know, just people coming out, you know, a lot of, you know, people are kind of scared. You know, it's getting better, but I think, you know, our crowd, they're going to come because they enjoy and follow us, you know, give us great support. But it may take a while for that to return.
Yeah. So you're concerned with your sort of core clientele. They may not be in the first wave of people who return to going out to clubs and to eat.
Yes, yeah, I think they may be, you know, concerned. Because I said we're a small venue,
yeah,
and then especially with us, because you know, we never charge, you know, no cover charge, you know, so we just have people, you know, just make dinner reservations. So you know, it's going to be a big challenge. You know, it's a big challenge to figure that part of it out, because, you know, live music, it was already a challenge. Just that, you know, to have it and support it and be able to you know, pay for it.
We're talking with Derek Pipkin. He's the owner of Pips on La Brea in Mid-City, Los Angeles. Live music nightly, full-service restaurant as well for his venue. He's one of the people that we're talking about who own venues that have been closed or partially closed during the pandemic, and what they're looking forward to with reopening and some of the challenges, particularly with limited capacity, where it's so difficult to be able to cover the expenses of reopening. Derek, what about with your staff? Are you going to be able to call them back, or are you going to have to hire, you think, some new people who have not worked with you before?
No, actually, my staff, we're bringing them back. I was fortunate to get approved for the PPP and with a small business loan. So we're going to be bringing back our staff, but right now, it's going to be very limited staff because it's, you know, it's 25% of your capacity. So we're just, we have to come back with limited staff and hopefully, you know, we can just kind of get through, and hopefully they just don't change things again. You know, hopefully we're moving forward instead of backwards, because once, you know, before, you know, they opened it up and then they closed everything. And, you know, when they close everything, that means the food goes, you know,
yeah,
food that you bought is going to go bad. And, you know, just, you know, all the services that you got turned on, you know, you got to get them turned off. You know, it's
yeah. I can imagine it's a huge logistical challenge. Now, you have a lot of singers who come in as a part of your jazz calendar. Is there going to be any problem with having singers as opposed to instrumental groups performing because of fears of COVID?
Well, right now they're just saying no music. And so it's like, it's instruments is everything. It's just zero.
But I mean, when you reopen, is that going to be a limitation on you?
You know, I don't know. Like I said, they change the rules almost literally weekly. And I think, you know, like I said, the rules now is just no live music. They haven't said about singers or anything like that.
We're talking with Derek Pipkin, the owner of Pips on La Brea. Also joining us is Jamie Flam, co-owner, co-artistic director of Dynasty Typewriter, which is in the Westlake area of Los Angeles, in the old Hayworth, or if you're as old as I am, remember it as the Vagabond Theater space, and where La Fonda Restaurant was in the building. Thanks so much for joining us, Jamie. We have about a minute before we break, and then we'll continue our conversation. But what's your reopening plan for your club?
That's a good question, and thanks for having me. We still don't have a date set. We're kind of playing it by ear. Like Derek said, there's, you know, conflicting reports. Every week seems like there's different information out there, and we also want to take the tact of being on the side of being as careful as possible. So even if, you know, we got word that we could open tomorrow, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to do that. We're going to open when we feel like it's the most safe for everyone. So that's our plan right now.
All right. We'll continue with Jamie Flam and Derek Pipkin joining us, Dave Brooks of Billboard as well. I'd like to hear from you if you have a music venue, if you have a comedy venue that you operate, a live performance space like that. What are your plans for reopening and how are you planning to do it? 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.
It's the final day of our KPCC Spring Member Drive. And tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, it's Film Week on KPCC. You'll hear what our critics think of the British thriller 6 Minutes to Midnight. It stars Eddie Izzard, Judi Dench, and Carla Jury. We'll also hear about the thriller The Vault, a Spanish film starring Freddie Highmore, directed by Jaume Balaguero, also Shoplifters of the World, which is set in Denver, and many others. Those just a few of the films. And we'll talk about the recent passings that we've had among actors. George Segal, with such a tremendous film career, including Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. He passed away earlier this week at the age of 87. We just had news that Jessica Walter, the actor, just died at the age of 80. And the French director, Bertrand Tavernier, we just got word, died as well. Round Midnight, one of my favorite films. Dexter Gordon, the great jazz tenor saxophonist, acted in that film, and he, to my knowledge, had not been an actor before, and was Oscar nominated for Best Supporting Actor. It was a terrific performance, and in fact, Derek Pipkin of Pips on La Brea. You remember Round Midnight, Derek?
Well, actually, no.
You've got to see it. As a jazz fan, you'd love it. And Dexter Gordon, his performance is great. He'd gotten straight by that point in his life and was sober and just gave a tremendous performance. It was kind of it was essentially a take on himself under a different character name. We're talking with the owners of clubs here in Southern California and venues that are awaiting the opportunity to reopen to offer their performances in music and in comedy. And I'd like to hear from you. If you've got a venue and you're awaiting word on reopening and you're looking at all the contingencies for reopening, please share with us where you're at in that process. This is part of our State of the Arts series, 866-893-5722. Important that we hear from you, 866-893-5722. You can tweet at AirTalk. You can post on the AirTalk Facebook page or post on the AirTalk page itself at kpecc.org. Dave Brooks of Billboard, do we know when some of the bigger music venues like the Forum, for example, might be opening?
Well, the April 1, date that we've discussed earlier for kind of the reopening of, venues at limited capacity, applies to all venues. Do we know when the Forum will be able to, either host a capacity that makes it affordable, because it might not be affordable for the Forum to do so at 10 or 20%, or when they'll be allowed to go to full capacity? Not yet. But we'd hope, by the time, June and July rolls around, that they'd be at least to the place where there's 50% capacity, and they could likely reopen, and it would make financial sense, especially for a concert.
Yeah, and I was curious with some of the venues. I don't know whether the Forum is even operating under Madison Square Garden, because I know they sold it to Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, but I don't know if there's any deal for them to continue to do concerts. But these larger operators, are they starting live performances elsewhere in the country under limited capacity?
In New York, they're going to begin starting concerts. The two major arenas there, as well as some of the clubs, and in other parts of the country, in Texas and Florida, they're beginning. They're already doing limited capacity events, and they're on track to do full capacity. As early as May. Now we'll see if that actually happens or not. We'll see if fans want to go at full capacity, if they feel safe enough. To go to an event and sit next to somebody. Hopefully we get to that point, where we have some kind of herd immunity. The numbers that you hear from, Dr. Fauci and kind of these federal groups are 70-85% of, adults being vaccinated. To kind of accomplish something to make it safe to attend those events. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less. But there's still a lot of, for how close we are to the end of this pandemic, there's a lot of questions about what it's going to look like at concerts once this pandemic ends.
We're talking with Dave Brooks, Senior Director of Live Music at Billboard. Jamie Flam is the co-owner and co-artistic director of Dynasty Typewriter, comedy theater and entertainment venue in the Westlake District of Los Angeles. It's in the space that for many years was the Hayworth Theater, and before that, the Vagabond. It's quite a storied past. past of that building. At this point, Jamie, are you talking with some of the artists and about ones you might book or whatnot, or is it premature for you to be lining up future dates for later in the year?
Yeah, we've, since we closed a year ago, have really tried to stay in touch with all of our talent and artists on some level or another. And we know a lot of them are chomping at the bit to get back. So we're starting to have those conversations. We're starting to get those inquiries from the agents and the managers. So clearly there's, a changing tide right now. And like I said before, we're so eager and excited to get back, but we're going to take a little bit more caution. And so whether that's experimenting, as soon as this spring or early summer, and just kind of taking the temperature on what audiences are comfortable with and the talent. So we're going to take it, one day at a time. But we do know that everyone is so ready to get back.
Yeah. Well, music is such a big part of so many of our lives. What about the potential requirement of a negative COVID test or proof of being vaccinated? Is that something you would consider at your club?
We've been talking about it, and it's definitely something we want to consider. But right now, we do think we want to make sure that everyone has that opportunity. And right now, it's still so limited, and so it's important to us that more people are being vaccinated and more people have the opportunity overall. So. Not at this point, no. The answer is no, but maybe in the coming weeks.
But it'll be controversial even then, of course. And I'm sure you've thought of all this. But even if vaccines are available to anybody who wants it, you're going to have a certain percentage of people who, for their own reasons, or in some cases because of physical issues, will not be able to safely have the vaccine. And so that still puts you in a difficult position, even with widespread availability.
Absolutely. And we're definitely, not rushing into that by any means. And ultimately, we'll probably make the call to wait as long as we need to, because, putting people in harm's way is that we want to avoid that at all costs. So, it's just every day we're taking all the information we're getting and trying to, like everyone else, make the decisions that are best for the safety of our staff and the talent in our audience.
And in terms of your staff, what sort of specialized training are you considering for when you reopen?
As soon as the pandemic started, we had a couple of our staff members trained to be, COVID compliance officers. And so probably taking that same tact with any staff that will be in the space regularly, making sure everyone is trained and have all the protocol in place to make sure that, anyone that enters the space is as safe as possible.
All right. Jamie, we wish you all the best. Thanks so much. Jamie Flam is the co-owner and co-artistic director of Dynasty Typewriter in the Westlake District. Derek Pipkin, owner of Pips on La Brea in Mid-City Los Angeles, that is a live music venue as well as a full dining experience. Derek, we wish you all the best. I look forward, maybe we check in with you once you've opened up and get a sense of how things are going at Pips.
Yes, I would love that, Larry. I definitely want to get you updated and stuff. And, I just appreciate the conversation because, like I said, this is all new to everybody.
Yeah.
Just so challenging, but, we have to get open to stay alive,
No question. Thanks very much. That's Derek Pipkin, and my thanks to Dave Brooks, Senior Director of Live Music at Billboard, all joining us as this State of the Arts series continues on the reopening of arts and culture in Southern California.
I'm Julia Paskin, host of Weekend Edition. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. She's not alone in leaving the church. She's found she's among a rising generation fleeing the fold. That's April 25th at the Crawford in Pasadena. Tickets at laist.com/events.